Reading is Psalm 13. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I bear pain in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day long? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death, and my enemy will say, I have prevailed. My foes will rejoice because I am shaken. But I trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, because he has dealt bountifully with me.
I remember some time ago when I grew up in the church back at home in Kent, there was one of our church members, and he was someone who was a high-flying businessman. He was responsible for helping to lead the European operations for a commercial company. And he was someone who was very busy, someone who had many demands, someone who had many pressures, many calls upon his time. And I remember that one of the areas that was a personal challenge was in the area of patience. And this person, I remember hearing, said that when he went on a Saturday to the supermarket, at times he would often be in the longest queue for the checkout. And it was chosen specifically that there would be a period of waiting, a period of the person in front who couldn't quite find their Nectar card or whatever. And just as you get to the end, there's that customer service 400, checkouts 3, please, as they realise that there's an item that they need to have returned and to come back. And he'd be waiting in the queue all this time. And it was an opportunity for establishing and developing patience. The fact I can't remember is whether he used to put himself in the queue or whether it was his wife who encouraged them to be in the queue. But patience was encouraged. We're going to hear a story now, and it's a testimony which comes from one of our own church folks, Sue Murray. But Sue's not actually able to be here to say it herself, so Diana, one of the other home group members, is going to read. But these are words that Sue Murray has written today as we think about this topic of patience.
Hello everybody, this is Sue's words. We moved home in July this year into a bungalow in the next road, so we didn't go very far. Although the property was only a few minutes walk away from where we already lived, the journey to actually move into it seemed a long and stressful one. We first saw the bungalow in May 2017 and felt straight away that it was just what we were looking for. Both my husband, Eddie, and I loved it after the first viewing and could see ourselves living there. We had been searching for a long time, so when our offer to buy was accepted, I felt that God was showing us where he wanted us to live. When a buyer was found quickly for our house, that seemed like confirmation that everything was falling into place. We were hopeful that we would have moved in by the autumn and so started to pack our belongings into boxes. However, by Christmas, we were still in the same place and our packing had come to a standstill. The people selling the bungalow had found some problems with the house that they were hoping to buy and so had to let it go, meaning they no longer had anywhere to move to. They assured us they still wanted us to buy their property and asked us to wait for them to find somewhere else. We agreed to wait, and I prayed that the person buying our house would be willing to wait as well, although it was hard to believe that was going to happen. We heard after that he had seen a couple of other houses he wanted to buy, but they had fallen through, so he made the decision to wait for ours. I wondered if this was part of God's plan. Months went by, during which time the people selling the bungalow found another property to buy, and then changed their mind about it a few weeks later. So our hopes were raised twice, only to be let down again. By the spring of this year, we were starting to think that perhaps we weren't meant to be moving after all, and were feeling very unsettled. We have been waiting almost a year. Half our belongings were packed up, and yet nothing was happening. I felt like we were in limbo and were unable to plan anything. When the chance to buy another bungalow arose, we wondered whether to go for it, but someone else beat us to it. So we took that to mean that God was closing the door on that particular one and still wanted us to wait for the first property. During this time, I knew that the ladies in the Tuesday house group and other people in the church were praying for us, which gave me a great deal of encouragement. I came across the words in Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. I felt that God was telling me to stop dwelling on the negatives and to focus instead on the positive things that he was going to bring about. In May, we heard the sellers in the bungalow had found a third property and were keen to move quickly, so everything was on again. This time, our buyer, who amazingly was still waiting for us, had to renegotiate his finances as more than a year had passed since his mortgage had been agreed. This meant another few weeks of anxious waiting when we felt that we were still going to lose the property at the final hurdle. However, the Lord was faithful and worked everything together for us. After waiting 14 months, we were able to move in July this year with just 3 weeks' notice and in the middle of the heat wave. It was worth the wait, and we are so grateful to everyone who prayed for us, but especially to God, who used this experience to teach me a lesson in patience, something that I really needed to learn. Sue Murray.
It's lovely to have some real life experiences, isn't it? A roller coaster that Sue's described and as Diana's read to us. As we think about patience, we could think about that desire within us to cope humanly with difficult circumstances and to be a patient in the supermarket queue. We could think about different areas of patience that affect our lives day to day. And what I want us to focus on primarily today is patience that looks at the interconnection between patience and trust in the living God. A patience that is trusting in the faithfulness of God. I think we heard it a number of times in the testimony that Sue wrote there. Did you notice these phrases? I wondered if this was part of God's plan. We took that to mean that God was closing the door on that. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Focused instead on the positive things that he was going to bring about. The Lord was faithful. What's happening here? Is this a story about buying a bungalow? Or is this a theological writing about God's character? Well, yes. Yes, the two meshing together in Sue's words. And it's about that interconnectedness between Sue wanting to buy the bungalow, but more than that, about her wanting to walk in God's paths, her desiring to follow in his steps because she knows his ways to be best. And so this ultimately is not a story about a bungalow. This is a story about someone who is wanting to be a person who follows and trusts in God, who puts their faith in his plans and purposes for them, because she knows that it's right to follow his will, it's right to follow his ways, even if she doesn't know exactly where he's leading her. And perhaps the most important aspect of faith, as we think about it as a topic, is actually about trustworthiness. It's about the trustworthiness of the one in whom we are putting our faith. you imagine it had been a very frosty night and you decided to walk past the Lady Grove Lakes, perhaps on the way to church, and as you came past, you thought, oh, actually, there's a bit of ice on the water there. Looks about a millimetre thick. I know what I'll do. I'll save a bit of time. Why bother walking all the way around the lake when I could merely skate across it? And so, with great confidence in this millimetre of ice, you slide out confidently across the lake, and within about 0.8 seconds, you find yourself up to your waist in freezing cold water. Because the reality is that despite the confidence, the ice was not thick enough to truly be able to put our trust in it. Take another scenario. Imagine that you decided to go to Heathrow Airport, and you get on a plane, and you catch a plane to Norway, and you go out to an area where there's a frozen fjord, and it's 15 inches thick, the ice. And you look at it and think, oh, I'm not so sure. I remember back to those Lady Grove experiences, I'm just not so sure. So you put on your life buoyancy aid, and you make sure you've got your whistle in your pocket. And then you get a big, thick bit of rope and you wrap it around yourself and you go and find a huge tree and you tie yourself with the rope to the tree to make sure you're connected there, and you put in a call and phone someone and say, look, hello lifeguard, look, I'm just about to make this move. If you don't hear from me within the next minute, send out whatever. And then very tentatively and gingerly, you just step out onto the ice and it holds. And you do another step and it holds. And it's going to hold because it's 15 inches thick. And I'm led to believe that a medium-sized truck can be held up by 12 to 15 inches of ice. The ice is going to hold. The most important thing is not about the level of our confidence, ultimately. It's about the level of the trustworthiness of the object or the one in whom we put our trust. It's all based on trust. I don't always have my wallet in my back pocket, but I do today. And in here, I've got a £10 note. It's a very fine one. I'm sure many of you recognise it. £10. It's got a lovely picture on the back. The trouble is, if I took this note into a fish and chip shop down the road, I suspect that what they would do as I handed them this for my cotton chips is they'd say, sorry mate, seen the notice? 1st of March, can't use it after the 1st of March. It's a load of rubbish, this, you can't use it, mate. I'd look at it and say, well, it's £10. He'd say, yeah, I know, it's an old £10 note, isn't it? It's an old £10 note, can't be used after the 1st of March. It's worthless, not worth anything. And I'm thinking, but I've worked hard, I've got this £10 note. He says it's worthless. Have any of you got a £10 note on you? So I'm not going to take it, don't worry, it's not one of those preacher moments. Has anyone actually, this is a genuine question, anyone got a £10 note? Right, okay. Under where it says Bank of England, you've got good eyesight, can you read? There's some very small writing under the Bank of England bit. Can you read in the microphone what it says?
I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of £10.
Right. Don't know if you've ever noticed that on a £10 note. It's the same on a new one. You'll be glad to know I do have a new one as well. I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of £10. This dates back to a time when the Bank of England used to, when they were originally founded back in 1694, if you had gone into the Bank of England and given them a £10 note, they would literally have been willing to give you gold to the value of £10. That stopped in 1931, I believe, was the date, when they changed the system. But the reality is that on the new note, it still says that. I promise to pay the bearer the sum of £10, and that's written with the authority of the Bank of England. So if I had gone from the fish and chip shop who had told me that my money was worthless and actually went up to Threadneedle Street, wherever, and went to the Bank of England and gave them an old note, they would honour the pledge and they would give me a new £10 note. They would say, actually, this is not worthless. It has the wording, the backing of the Bank of England, our trustworthy promise, You give me that old £10 note that people are saying worthless, and I will give you a nice, brand new, spanking £10 note. Because the promise is faithful. They promised to pay the bearer £10. And the whole of the banking system is based upon the faithfulness of that promise. If you take insurance as well, the whole of the insurance industry started originally in a coffee shop, the whole of Lloyd's of London, started with an agreement that actually someone would give someone some money, the premium, and in response to that, they would say, if something happens, the insured event, if the ship goes down or whatever, that actually, because I've given you this note and because you've given me this premium, I will promise that if the ship sinks, then you come back in with your insurance documents and I will pay for the value of the ship. It's the whole premise of the insurance industry. So when you're lying in bed at night with peace of mind because you've just renewed your car insurance, it's based on the fact that actually the peace of mind is due to the fact that you have faith in the promise that if the crash happens, someone comes into the back of you or whatever, the insurance company will pay for it because they have promised so to do and it's in line with the insurance documents. It's all based on the promise being faithful. If the insurance industry got renowned for, you know, forget the terms and exceptions and conditions and subject, otherwise the terms and exceptions, if they actually said, well, I know you're supposed to be covered and the document says you're supposed to be covered, but we're just not going to pay it, then the insurance industry would fall flat. Because it's all based on the faithfulness of the promise of the insurance documentation. The banking industry, the insurance industry, the whole of the stock market in effect, based on the faithfulness of the promise. When we think back to the sketch that we saw Jane and the others perform here, the important thing was the promise of the one who made that promise to Abraham that I will give you and Sarah a child. And it was so ridiculous in human terms that the Bible tells us that Sarah laughed because it's just ridiculous. How can I have a baby at this age? It just doesn't make sense. But actually the important thing was the faithfulness of the one who gave the promise, the faithfulness of God's words. Did you notice those words that Jonah's narrator said right at the end? 25 years elapsed between the promise and its fulfillment. A promise is given that seems so ridiculous that it's laughable, and then 25 years happens and nothing is happening to fulfill the promise during that time, it seems. How are Abraham and Sarah going to feel, Abraham and Sarah, during that time of those 25 years? It seemed laughable at the time, and then 25 years has gone on, and with each year, Sarah has got older and older and older. Do you remember those things? 9 months later, 13 years later, a short time later, 1 year later, still no baby. And then the baby comes. What's the most important thing? The length of time that is taken, or the trustworthiness of the one in whom the promise is given? And it's like that in life, isn't it? It's about the faithfulness of God. And if we're wanting to live as patient people waiting for God to fulfill his purposes, we need to be looking at the character of God and his faithfulness. We can look to look perhaps at the periods of other people in history who have waited and waited and waited, seemingly nothing happening for the faithfulness of God. Israel, as a nation in Egypt, 400 years of slavery, decades, generations, centuries come and go. And then finally, one day, there are those words spoken out, let my people go. Because throughout the whole time, there has been the faithful God who hasn't forgotten his people. And he raises up Moses to bring his people out of slavery. But 400 years it took. But it's not about the time scale, it's about the faithfulness of God and ultimately him fulfilling his plans and purposes. And in scripture, so often people cry out, how long, O Lord? How long? Psalm 13, how long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I bear pain in my soul? How many of us are saying that this week? How long must I bear pain in my soul? How long, God? I used to believe. I'm not sure now. How long? How much longer can I take this? How long can I have sorrow in my heart all day long? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? These are the opening words of Psalm 13. And maybe there were people in the Old Testament times and that period when they were awaiting the Messiah, and that period in between the Old Testament and the coming of the New Testament, 400 years. There were some words spoken which have been written in the Apocrypha, but in terms of the Bible as we know it in the Protestant Church, there was 400 years of silence. The nation of Israel were waiting for the Messiah. But there was silence. There was just nothing. There was no speaking from God in the Protestant Bible for 400 years. How long, God? Are we really to believe this? We're not sure. I mean, the prophets, the people around the time of the prophets weren't so sure then. And we've had 400 years of silence. And then one day the skies thronged with the sound of the angels. And the voice rang out, "Go down to the stable where Jesus is lying in the stable, the Messiah. He's been born to you this day." After 400 years of waiting, the prophecy was fulfilled. The Messiah came, because it wasn't about the time scale, it was about the faithfulness of the one who made the promise. Maybe we're thinking about the second coming, the coming of Jesus Christ. That reminder to us that he says that he will come again. That there will be a day when there will be the trumpet sound and he will come, and in the twinkling of an eye all will be changed. 2 Peter 3. First of all, you must understand this, that in the last days scoffers will come, scoffing and indulging their own lusts and saying, "Where is the promise of his coming? Where is it?" Church? Been calling yourself church for 2,000 years. Jesus was here, if you believe that. Where is he now? 2,000 years, you're still waiting? Seems a long time, doesn't it? And yet, what's the most important thing? The length of the years, or the promise and the faithfulness of the one who makes it? The faithfulness of the one who says, "I will come again." Yeah, 2,000 years. I don't know how long it's going to be. The Bible tells us we don't know. But I believe in the faithfulness of the one who's made the promise. And God is patient with us. That same chapter goes on to say this: "But do not ignore this one fact, beloved, that with the Lord one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like one day. The Lord is not slow about his promise, as some think of slowness, but is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but all to come to repentance." And maybe as we think about the time scale and the length of time, maybe we can think about the patience of God, his desire, his yearning that all of us come to know him. And it may be that there are people in this room who have just turned up today and just come into this place, and you're kind of wondering, why am I here today? I don't know about any of this stuff. Well, we have a God who is faithful and is calling us to recognize that he's a God who's calling us back to himself, a patient God, not wanting any of us to perish, but all to come to know him as our Father, as our Creator God, as our Lord. He's a faithful, faithful, faithful God. And we can have confidence in the present for the future based on the past. Let me say that again. We can have confidence in the present for the future based on the past. Based on the fact that God has sent his one and only Son to come and die on a cross, to be raised again, to give us hope for eternity. If we truly want to know what it means to live as people who are patient, let's remember to look to the faithfulness of the one who has promised to us that he will be our God forever, eternally. The one who knows us inside out and longs for us to come to him as our Saviour. For in him and in hope we were saved. Now, hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience.